From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to the world's most listened to late night talk show, Coast to Coast AM. In a few hours, we'll have some open lines and a night terror line because of an idea that I got from an Iraqi soldier, a U.S. soldier in Iraq. He's back now. He is suffering eerie nightmares. He says, my brain will just not let go. So we'll talk about that in a few hours. In a small town in Wisconsin, let's hear it for Harvey Pollack. As motorists pulled into his gas station, they honked and gave him a thumbs up. Why? Because he wasn't selling any fuel. The owner of the town market mobile station in a small suburb north of Milwaukee shut down his pumps for 24 hours, hoping to start a movement aimed at convincing oil companies to lower their prices. This is what he says. Somebody out there is making money at these prices, but it's not me. So I just thought, what can I do to help the consumer? Good for you, Harvey. Well, if you go to the coasttocoastam.com website under Hot Stories, take a look at the story about Sony touting its tiny film-thin television screen that bends in a race for the ever-thinner displays for televisions, cell phones, and other gadgets. Sony may have developed one to beat them all, a razor-thin display that bends like paper while showing full-color video. You can see a picture of this. Sony released the video of the new 2.5-inch display. You can squeeze it with your hand. It kind of reminds me of what Jesse Marcel was talking about when he held a piece from Roswell from that 1947 crash. Sony said it is yet to decide what to do with this technology. In Phoenix, the body of a man who apparently tried to break into an elementary school was discovered in an air conditioning duct on the roof of the cafeteria. The man tried to use the duct to get into the Sierra Vista Elementary School. He died there. Police say they don't know why he tried to break in or how long he had been there. An Englishman says that he has broken the world record for non-sleep by staying awake for 11 days and nights. He broke the record of 264 sleepless hours set by Randy Gardner here in the United States in 1964. Well, a passenger plane was forced to land after flying into a swarm of bees in Britain. The Boeing 737 with 90 passengers on board had to return to the airport in southern England shortly after takeoff. The pilot decided to abort the flight. It was on its way to Portugal. He returned for safety checks. The engine was clogged with bees. And also in Scott City, Missouri, a truck driver hauling more than 17 million bees. We're wondering where they're all going. He was killed in an accident on Interstate 55. And three southeast Missouri beekeepers were called in to help manage the swarm of bees that escaped after the wreck. Each of the 700 beehives in the trailer contained about 25,000 bees. He went off the road and it overturned, his truck overturned in a soybean field. In a moment, Linda Moulton Howe joins us. She talks about unusual animal deaths in the United States, Chile, and Argentina. She'll update us about this very strange picture that Chad took, that UFO, and then also we'll talk about the honeybee disappearances. All that and more next on Coast to Coast AM. And Linda Moulton Howe, she's an Emmy Award-winning writer, television producer, investigative reporter, author who goes directly to the men and women at the forefront of science and environmental challenges. She heads up her website called earthfiles.com, which I really suggest you go to on a regular basis because she has incredible stories there. And she's going to update us on some very unusual stories we've been following here on Coast to Coast AM. Back with us for 2 hours tonight. Hi, Linda. How are you?
Hi, George. How are you?
Good. I'm doing great. Good to have you with us.
Well, may everybody have a healthy and a peaceful Memorial Day in spite of all of the seeming chaos and earth mysteries that just keep proliferating from everywhere all over this planet.
They never seem to stop, Linda, including some of the ones you're working on right now.
Yeah, I remember 7 months ago that I reported on Coast to Coast about a 1,300-pound healthy black Angus cow that was found dead on October 9th of 2006 in Valier, Montana. And I went up there to investigate. And the ranch owners had seen the cow alive and well at 5:30 just the night before. And that animal's jaw was stripped clean, the udder was removed in a smooth cut, and the rectal and vaginal tissue had been cored out, all without blood. And this is the case where Sheriff Tom Kuka found this crater about 2 feet from where the cow landed and assumed that the cow had been dropped from the air high enough to hit the ground and bounce. And in fact, when biophysicist W.C. Levengood studied the soil and the plants that we were able to get from that pasture, he found in tests that something had fallen, that there was definite hard physical evidence of compression from hard impact on that soil and in that soil in the crater, but not from any of the other soil around the cow, the crater, or in the rest of the pasture. Now, the Ponderay County, Montana investigators did not know that further south in northern New Mexico, a red Angus bull was also found dead and mutilated on October 1st, 2006, which was only 8 days before the cow was found in Valier. Well, that is a small ranching community of Conjilon. It's spelled C-A-N-J-I-L-O-N, but it is pronounced Conjilon, New Mexico. It is surrounded by really high mountain peaks, 10,000 feet plus. And down in the valley, there are perhaps 1,000 head of cattle, and they're on various small properties. One rancher, Albert Martinez, has raised cattle in Conjilon for 50 years, and he had heard about animal mutilations in Dulce, Chama, Mora, and other northern New Mexico regions before, but he had never seen it with his own eyes until October 1st. And he was so surprised by the strange excisions on his red Angus bull that he talked with neighbors and local authorities about it. And the Rio Grande Sun ended up doing a newspaper story about that bull mutilation, and it caught the attention of Gallup, New Mexico animal mutilation researcher Robert Allen. Robert traveled to Conjilon on October 4th, just 3 days after Mr. Martinez found his bull. He met with Albert Martinez at the site. He looked for tracks. He looked for all kinds of signs of things on the ground, and he did a night watch from one of the mountains to see if any aerial craft would show up, because people were always reporting weird lights. And Robert Allen was surprised by what he saw, both on the animal and in the night sky.
We went to the site, and this was approximately 50 hours after the bull was mutilated.
Mm-hmm.
And I measured the distance from the bull itself out to about an 80-yard perimeter there and could not find any footprints, tire tracks, any sign of anything coming to the bull or leaving it. I was startled to find the precision that these cuts were made on the genitalia. Its anus was gored out. Its testicles and penis were removed. It had one eye missing. It had strange marks over its rib cage. It had these cut marks on its hooves and its legs, like something cut these nodules off.
And this is the dew claw.
The dew claw, yes.
And that very specific removal of the dew claw, in which there is a hole left and the dew claw is taken so neatly, has, in my mind, been one of those details that not many people know.
Yes, it also had the lips around its mouth down to the jawbone there, removed just in the surface where the teeth are. It wasn't cut all the way back to the ear. The front of its lips were removed, and one of its eyes was taken out, its right eye.
Could you discuss what Mr. Martinez told you about blood on the animal when he found it?
Well, he was puzzled because there was no blood on the ground. There was no blood trail off to the brush there. No blood was coming out of the animal. Also, he said there was an amazing smell to the animal. He said it smelled, how he described it, was like a dentist's office and a doctor's office put together.
Oh, so a medicinal smell.
A medicinal smell, yes. And he says it was quite pungent. You could smell it from a pretty good distance. Now, on the other side of the pasture there, we went to, and there was marks on the other side of the pasture on approximately 60 yards away from where the bull was found mutilated. You could tell an object landed there. there was indentations in the ground. And it was quite puzzling because the terrain, that was on a slope there. So this object came down on a slope and landed.
And what were the marks like?
Oh, they were round in circular pattern. This is October, so the ground was more soft than the hard freeze. So it probably was down a good, I'd say, 12 inches in the ground.
And how big?
I'd say a foot.
And did they have a pattern on the ground?
Triangular pattern. We saw one off to the distance there, to the north of it, and then went to the east and west, and it was a triangular marking there.
Three circles going down 12 inches into the soil on a slanted hillside.
Yes, and they were absolutely precise. There was no variance in them. So that object came down neatly, made that impression, and it took off neatly. I could not find any disturbance on the ground. I didn't see any of the burnt marks. There was no tracks at all going from this hillside to the bull.
And how far, in terms of feet, would you estimate it was from the body of the mutilated bull to where those three triangular impressions were in the hillside?
I would say approximately 80 yards. Went to the rancher. He's been there approximately 50 years himself. His family's from there. His children were born and raised there. And he's been a rancher all his life. His father was too. The area is predominantly Forest Service, the people that work there, and ranching. Over the years, they've seen bizarre light displays over that area. His daughter and her husband were walking through there probably about a year early to that, and they saw these amazing lights in the sky at night. From what he told me, the lights were circular in a pattern. They were yellow, blue, and red, the lights. And they came in at an amazing speed, and they stopped on a dime. And they viewed it for a while, 25, 30 seconds. And the lights took off towards the north of it in an incredible speed, was gone in a matter of a second out of their view.
Do I understand that what they were seeing when these different colored lights came together, the lights formed a ring in the sky?
A ring in the sky, yes. They specifically saw the lights that were yellow, blue, and red under the belly of it, I assume.
But are we talking about one large object or multiple smaller objects?
One object coming in. And they saw this several times over the years in this area. I saw the incredible light there right after this mutilation in October, as I camped up in the mountains there for almost 2 weeks.
Yeah, describe what you saw with your own eyes.
Well, it was approximately about 8:30. The mutilation took place the 1st of October. I was there from the 1st of October to approximately the 12th or 13th. On the 4th of October, I'm sitting there hoping up on top of a mountain that oversees the valley there that another mutilation was going to take place. And approximately 8:30 that night, I viewed an object coming in at a speed that I could not calculate. It came in so fast. It came from the east over the mountains there, down into the valley, and over to a ridge across A.E. Calion there. And the object was a bluish-white streak. It came in accelerating at an amazing speed, and it was losing altitude at the same time. So it looked like it was coming, like it was shot down into the mountainside. It went right into the mountain. I went over to the area. I tried to find it. The terrain's too rugged. It was dark. And I couldn't pinpoint exactly where this object came in, but I just believe that these objects are coming in and out of this valley on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm. And that was then the night of October 4th. The bull was found mutilated by the owner on October 1.
Yes.
Now, has anybody in law enforcement in that valley ever just said to you straightforwardly, we're dealing with creatures not from this planet?
Well, I talked to a police officer up there who was there for 34 years. And he investigated several mutilations over the years. And they've never been able to determine how the animal has been killed. No one's been able to find out any person involved in it. No one's ever been arrested. No one's ever been filmed. Some of the mutilations were 4 hours apart from seeing the actual animal to when the animal was found mutilated. It was just startling to these ranchers that they would go out there and view the animals. And then 4 hours later, they'd find one mutilated, not knowing how it happened. No signs, no sign of struggle, no predator kills. None of these animals have any type of teeth marks on them.
Not predator.
No predator at all. So something obviously is landing.
Or they're taken someplace and it's all done and they're returned through this beam technology that I've had at least a dozen eyewitnesses who are ranchers, described to me seeing animals rising in beams of light or lowered in beams of light or dropped from something in the sky that is glowing down through trees, making a ruckus, which is why ranchers have noticed in the first place.
Yes, and I also investigated one in Arroyo Hondo there where they found a bull that was killed under a trailer, which was amazing.
As if it were put there almost like, how would you do this? This is what we can do.
Exactly. It was just a blatant display of power and technology. And these people, when they saw that, were just absolutely stunned. I talked to a gentleman there in Chama who said that he saw, this is incredible, they were going up the pass from Chama there. That's at 7,800 feet. So you're going up to 10-4 on the pass. They were climbing up to the front pass there, Cumbres, and they saw an object come down from the sky. It was a solid object, and he saw several objects split from it and go in every direction and fly in zigzag circular patterns and then all come back and join itself again. And he came down to his car. He was with a friend, and they were sitting there, and the object came virtually almost on top of the hood of the car, shined an amazingly bright light into the car. The object stayed stationary there for a couple of minutes as if they were viewing the vehicle. It shot straight up, and then it broke up in two other spheres and went in every direction, zigzagged around, and it returned itself to the original form, and it shot off to the sky at breakneck speed.
I've had several witnesses over the last 20-some years tell me that they have seen these beams of light come down into pastures or into forests. They've seen animals go up into the beams. They've seen animals come down in the beams, and they have heard animals drop literally down through trees, breaking branches, and then they find the mutilated animals on the ground in little craters where their bodies have dropped, just like Pend'Oreille County, Montana, a few months ago. And in what I think is one of the most important books that has come out in the last few years, it is The Day After Roswell by former U.S. Army Lieutenant Colonel Philip J. Corso. And he described in great detail the U.S. government cover-up of a non-human craft and bodies in the back engineering of non-human technologies. And he wrote, quote, "In the Pentagon from 1961 to 1963, I reviewed field reports from local and state police agencies about the discoveries of dead cattle whose carcasses looked as though they had been systematically mutilated. Local police reported that when veterinarians were called to the scene to examine the dead cattle left in fields, they often found evidence not just that the animal's blood had been drained, but that entire organs were removed with such surgical skill that it could not have been the work of predators or vandals removing the organs for some depraved ritual." Lieutenant Colonel Corso told me in his own words before he died in 1998 that he had looked at classified documents in the Pentagon during his work in Washington about unusual animal deaths around the planet in both hemispheres, and that these highly classified documents said the perpetrators were, and this was a quote, "extraterrestrial biological entities," and the earliest date that he saw in a document was 1951, 1951, only 4 years after the alleged crashes in Roswell, New Mexico. And beginning in 2002, there has been another wave of animal mutilations in Argentina. Authorities estimate there have been more than 3,000 cases. And now, again, this April to May 2007, there have been cattle mutilation reports from Argentina and new chupacabra puncture attacks in Chile. And I'm going to have an update on that after the break.
Good work, Linda. It's just an amazing story. They just never stop,
no,
they?
No, don't.
My, oh, my. And you're going to also update us a little bit later on tonight about this incredible UFO story,
well,
whatever it may be.
I don't know. See, I've never followed it as a UFO. I think it's a black government project.
Well, until we identify it, it's a UFO.
Right. Right? That's true.
I'm not saying it's extraterrestrial. It is unidentified. And then later on in the second half of the second hour, we'll have conversations with you, Linda. We'll take phone calls for
you.
Yeah,
and I've got some updates on honeybees as well. But I'm telling you, this strange dragonfly thing, it is provoking some of the most interesting I'll say what seems to be emails from engineers and people with military background.
Okay, well, stick with us. Linda Moulton Howe will be with us for the next hour and a half. And like I just said, the last half hour of next hour, we'll have conversations with Linda. But she still has two blockbuster reports for us to come on Coast to Coast AM. We'll be back in a moment. A couple more segments with Linda Moulton Howe before we start conversations with Linda. And then later on tonight, it'll be our Friday into Saturday morning open lines. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie with Linda Moulton Howe, who continues her investigation into the very strange and mysterious stories on this planet. Go ahead, Linda.
Thanks, George. Well, back in 2002, when this huge wave of animal mutilations began in Argentina and spilled over into Chile, authorities there were getting actual reports from veterinarians about high-heated excisions, very unusual organs removed from the side of the animals, and people were beginning to just talk everywhere in six provinces in Argentina that something that was not earthly was interacting with their animals, taking water from their water tanks, was associated with all of these beams of light people saw, lights in the sky, lights near the ground. It was really, really intense from 2002 to 2003. And in that period of time, Argentina's federal INTA agency, that's very similar to the USDA here in the United States, and it's referred to as SENASA, they had decided that everything was getting out of hand and they were worried about panic. And so they held a press conference and they even brought photographs with them. And they had an official press release that said that the answer to all of these animal mutilations, and this is a quote from the press release, were, quote, red-nosed mice whose nutritional habits had changed to eating cattle, unquote.
Yes, and eating them at precision ways.
Well, even the veterinarians there laughed at the government's explanation as preposterous. And the veterinarians knew that they had seen excisions on animals that showed signs of high heat. I talked through a translator out of Buenos Aires with a veterinarian who was talking about that he was looking at cautery, exactly like I had investigated with John Altshuler in Denver and Colorado and other places, the same exact evidence. Well, now Scott is going to explain to us that even though the Argentina government tried to get the farmers to stop reporting these mutilations and accept the mouse explanation, farmers, veterinarians, and others kept going to the media about new unusual animal deaths.
There are a number of print sources and electronic sources that have appeared in Argentina that have not been afraid to convey information on mutilations, even after the government accused them of fear-mongering after the 2002 wave of cattle mutilations.
When the government trotted out the red-snouted mouse is the explanation?
That's correct. And they figured, look, we've already given you the answer to this mystery. If you insist on suggesting that there's something beyond this, you're creating a panic and you could be liable.
And so people have been afraid to report mutilations, even with the fact that more than 3,000 cases have been reported over the last 5 years.
Absolutely. Many of these farmers, we're talking about very, very small landowners here. Sometimes you're talking about huge ranches, but the concept of insurance, insuring your herd, not an issue. Most of these people lose the animals, they've lost livelihood. And they figure, look, let's not get ourselves involved in government trouble to add to our misery. But in this case, the one from Novo Diario Web, 5 head of cattle turned up mutilated, causing concern among the residents of this location, which is 50 kilometers distant from the city of Sumampa. The victims in this case involved 4 heifers and 1 calf, and as has occurred in many other cases, they were missing tongues, udders, eyes, and tails. They were found some 300 meters from the home of farmer Julio Farias, who explained, and I quote, "It has been a week since we found the animals, and they haven't shown any signs of decomposition. birds of prey are only now starting to approach the location, end quote. Part of the article mentions that the Dulce River, which runs through that area, has been at its flood stage, and of course, as the floodwaters receded, has left a lot of mud and loam in its wake. And you should be able to see any kind of prints of anyone trying to approach the animals in question. This has not been the case.
So we have five animals, and that there's no blood on the bodies, and that there's no signs of tracks, even in wet soil.
That is correct. Every 2 years, we do seem to get some kind of resurgence of these cases. I think it was back in 2003 or 4, we had those cases in Chile, not in Argentina, involving the winged simian creatures that attacked the farmer near the town of Parral. Perhaps the most impressive of these cases involving this particular mutilating creature came from the city of Concepcion in Chile, where Professor Liliana Romero heard noises coming from the courtyard of her apartment building at 1:30 in the morning. When she went to look, she sees, and I quote here, an immense man, 2 meters tall, with shoulder blades split as though it had wings. The following day, she found a dead dog with puncture marks in its neck in the courtyard. So this entity was clearly exsanguinating something. Chupacabra's cases involving sightings of strange creatures always seem to begin in April. The traditional chupacabras with the spines down the back.
Mm-hmm. The one that stands and walks and can go down to four legs in spring, which is different from the black bat-like whatever it is.
Absolutely correct.
Why do you think that there's been a focus in Argentina and Chile?
That is a very good question, and I guess it would probably have to do with the fact that Argentina and Chile have been focuses for strange phenomena going back at least to the 50s. Let's say that these are extraterrestrial force. There's lots of UFO cases, suggestions that there are UFO bases off the Argentine coast and in the Andes.
There are basically six provinces where there's been the focus of the animal mutilations in Argentina. And are those six provinces where all of the cattle are raised in Argentina?
Most things seem to be coming from La Pampa, also from Rio Negro, from Chubut. As you start going from the Buenos Aires area on down, the city of Santa Rosa and that entire area, let's say 50 to 75 miles around, is one of these very strange parts of the world that seems to attract any kind of weirdness to it. They have UFO cases. They have cases involving small private planes that can't find their way back to the local airport because they report the terrain beneath them has changed completely. You have your chupacabras cases, cattle mutilations, and cases involving witchcraft, cases involving ritual magic. I mean, you have so much stuff in that one particular area.
Could there be a relationship between the electromagnetic fields of this planet that some can collapse at points, and if there are collapses in certain geographic areas because of something having to do with the geography, maybe it allows this, what should we say, parallel time, parallel universe, something to be able to come into where magnetic fields are not stable?
If you look at the map of mutilations back in 02, a lot of the cases seem to be occurring in almost a straight line. And perhaps they were following some kind of fault where there was a weakening of some kind of energy or some kind of, I guess, a lee line of some sort. It was very interesting. They all seemed to be lined up.
Right, and that lining up of dead animals has occurred in the United States as well. I've documented a case in Hope, Arkansas back in 1989 in which five pregnant cows were all lined up and mutilated. When you think about chupacabras in Chile, what is the strangest case that you remember translating?
In the month of May 2003, six witnesses, five boys and their uncle, were treated to the amazing sight of very, very small, imp-like creatures, more like elves. They were described as having dark gray skin, oval heads, long pointed ears. And these little creatures were involved in attacking a flock of lambs on the property. One of the creatures punched a lamb until it fell to the ground. This is something that had not been seen previously in any of these incidents involving strange creatures and farm animals. What I found stranger still of this report is the fact that the onlookers were reportedly in a stupor, unable to react, unable to do anything about it, just helpless onlookers as their animals were being attacked by these strange creatures.
So not only out of Chile do we have eyewitnesses to these strange, small, gray, pointed ear creatures punching a lamb that falls to the ground, sort of like a chupacabras attack.
Punching.
But there were, and Scott was telling me this, this is one of another very interesting case. This is also in Chile. And in one instance, there were school children, and they were on their way home, and they reported seeing an animal jump off of a rooftop that was near them, and it came down in their path, blocked them, and as if it were confronting them. But the children told all of their parents and the teachers that when this thing jumped down, it was hovering off of the ground, and it seemed to be hovering a number of centimeters off of the ground. And these are the kinds of eyewitness cases that are, I mean, George, we're talking probably hundreds and hundreds of where people have seen creatures floating, odd creatures, the beams of light. There was even a case back in the 2002-2003 period that was back in Argentina, and there were some people at a lake, and they saw somebody, which they thought it was a person, rising in a beam of light into a disk in the sky. And so this part of the world, if you said, is there one place on the planet where there have been maybe the most complex richness of high strangeness associated with unusual animal lights, mysterious lights, and unusual animal deaths, it would be Chile and Argentina. And we're getting cases again in the spring of 2007. And I want everybody to know that at my news website, www.earthfiles.com, I have all of the images and the text from all of these reports tonight having to do with the unusual animal deaths, Chile, Argentina, the strange drone or whatever it is, and a whole series of reports also on the disappearing honeybees. So use Earth Files as a news supplement having to do with facts about some of these Earth mysteries.
Linda, this one is bizarre. What do you think's going on there?
In which one?
the punching animal.
Oh, the chupacabras. I spent 2 full weeks in January of 1996 in Puerto Rico investigating at what would be kind of the midway of this big, big chupacabras phenomenon that seemed to emerge full-blown in Puerto Rico first. And while we were over there, I was able to talk with translators to people, Madeline Totling, who had one of these creatures walk right past their window. And she and her mom took me into their house, had me come to the window, showed me how they were taking a cloth, and they were cleaning the window. And right outside the window was the sidewalk. There was no grass, just sidewalk. And the mother and Madeline, through the translator, were showing me that no more than 3 feet from them, separated by glass, suddenly, coming slowly, not fast, was some kind of a creature they had never seen before in their life, standing approximately from the bottom of its feet to the top of its head, about 4.5 to 5 feet tall. And that they couldn't understand whether it was drugged, sleepy, I think is the way they said it, because it was holding its hands or paws up in front of it, and there were only 3 fingers on each paw or hand. And there were only 3 toes that they could see very clearly on the sidewalk. And it had sparse hair, but there were spots There was coloration, mottled coloration. The eyes, they compared in Spanish to English as looking like a gray jello, solid. They could see no white, they could see no black, just solid gray jello that was sort of slanted and long. And that all of a sudden, because they were so startled, and I think that the mother yelled, the creature went down now on what it was standing up, went down on all fours and sprang. And when it sprang, as so many people said when they saw this animal, that's why they thought it was like a kangaroo, it sprang 6-8 feet in one spring, and it only took 3 or 4 bounds, and it went across the street, up over a car and over a fence that I was there myself. The fence was at least a foot higher than I was, and this thing just sprung over it. And those are two of the best eyewitnesses I talked to because of this extraordinary closeness that they had being on the inside of the house with the glass window and looking at this. Well, now you would say, okay, we have to find out what that is. But I had as many interviews with people who did not see that particular, if you want to call it, spotted kangaroo with three fingers, three toes, and gray jello eyes. There were more, well, I'll say maybe 50-50, as many people who said that they saw what they thought was a black bat. And that's what a lot of the cases are in Chile, that it is something that can fly, that has wings. And in one particular case, I went to the house where a man showed me his dog. The dog still had two puncture holes in the right side of its neck, no blood. And the man saw this black-winged thing.
How big was it?
He said no more than about 4 feet, like a four-foot wingspan.
That's a pretty big bat.
Yeah, but that it came down in front of him on the back of his dog. His dog yelped and then this thing took off. And when he ran over to his dog was actually chained. The dog couldn't run. There were the holes, and George, he said, there was no blood. They're just these holes, and those holes were still there when I went to his house and did an interview. Well, in Chile, they talk about the winged men, but they didn't have winged men in Puerto Rico, but they talk about things with wings in Chile that are attacking the animals. And so it's a very still confusing story about exactly what are the perpetrators. And I would say that there's more than one type, that there seems to be at least two. And then the bigger question, are they something that was planted here that didn't evolve on this earth, which is what some people think, or is it some genetic aberration gone wild? And I don't know the answer.
Or could it be a creature that we just never identified on this planet?
Well, I'll tell you, probably the most definitive link to the so-called UFO non-human side were children in northern Mexico. And this was also a case in 1996, just before all the Chupacabra wave ended. And the children reported and drew on pieces of paper that they saw this silver disc come down in the field, and what walked out of it is what Madeline drew as a chupacabras in Puerto Rico. But I'm talking to you now south of the Texas border. And that what walked out of the disc, the children said, proceeded to attack the family dog, which died from puncture marks.
Linda, this one's a mind-boggler, too.
Well, I'm telling you, the next one is fascinating, even though I don't have answers on it either, but it is definitely fascinating, this drone or whatever it is.
Next hour, what do you have in store?
That's what we're going to talk about. What I have been learning, some recent data, and an eyewitness who has gone on the record, if not with her whole name, at least with part of her name. And it's extremely important to realize that a person who worked in the California state government for 25 years with no axe to grind and nothing to gain, wanted people to know that she saw this dragonfly, whatever it is, over Sequoia Park in California in May 2005, 2 years ago, and we're going to hear her own words after the break.
That's next.